This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Now, Lauren, I know a lot of people laughed at your thing about the apple last night, but I see where you're coming from.
Thank you.
Totally, because I used to kind of think that as a kid also.
Hallelujah.
Come on, you throw it up. It's an orphan now.
Exactly. And you've had such a close relationship with it, and now it's gone.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, good.
This movie was at Sundance. I've seen
a lot of people do this.
Obsessive compulsives.
A lot of directors, actually.
Control freaks.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I'll have it on this way. Notice what he's doing? It's all in his direction.
Here you go.
Then this one I'm assuming you've seen it with an American audience or a non-New Zealand audience.
Yeah.
Were you worried at all, like, what the reaction would be? Did they get the humor? Like, is there anything that surprises you when you see it with different audiences around the world?
Yeah, I think, like, you know, there are definitely moments in the film where, like, no matter where you are, everyone laughs at these moments. But, yeah, for sure, there are a lot of the European audiences laugh at completely different things.
Yeah, the Dutch laughed.
They like a lot of the kind of darker stuff. And in New Zealand as well, like our humour is maybe a little more subtle in that we really love those kind of moments of
pain
and discomfort that comes from watching dysfunctional families and, you know, relating to them in a way. So, definitely, the audiences have, you know, reacted differently, but I guess I was pretty pleasantly surprised that everybody basically really enjoyed the film and got it, and, you know.
We were most nervous about Germany, but we were at the Berlin Film Festival, and that was terrible. We were like, oh, this is going to be a disaster, but no, same thing.
Because of their penchant for sort of wacky, over-the-top.
Yeah, humor. Yeah, because, yeah, they're wacky, exactly.
I like the, like, really physical sort of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of slapstick in this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the choice of going, like, in the middle animation and switching it back and forth? Between that?
Well, they actually kind of developed a little bit from the script stage right through to the very final edit, where we had originally it was going to be one moment of animation, and that kind of threw everything a little bit too much, and then it, like, broke into two part the story the animation story broke into two, and then it got chopped up a lot into different moments so that it wasn't. So I think some audiences kind of freaked out when they were watching a film, and then suddenly it breaks into this new format, and I think a lot of people couldn't handle it. So we kind of tied it right in from the very beginning credits right through to the end. It actually works better, I think. Yeah.
And it's because you love animation. Eastern Bloc animation's Taika's favourite thing. So any chance to put it in would be great. And he'd always say, this is my low budget. You know, I can do my first feature. Yeah. I can do what I want. And we didn't think anyone would see it apart from New Zealanders, you know.
Yeah, originally we never really thought that anyone would, that this film would do anything except maybe a few festivals here and there, because it was, you know, a very small, intimate, and it's a New Zealand film, you know. And the only New Zealand films that do well are, like, dark, you know, family dramas where kids die. And so, it's definitely, I think it's a new development for New Zealand cinema to have comedy, and especially romantic comedy, get as much attention as this one.
Can you talk a little bit about the casting process? You had some really eccentric characters. They really worked well.
Yeah. Well, Lauren's character, that was, like, a given right from the start. She was going to play that character. And
we cast the film together because, yeah.
Yeah, and so a lot of the characters were written based on certain people, or, like, you know, with actors in mind, just thinking, this guy will be great at this, you know, for this role and this person. And the actual casting, we didn't actually audition that many people. We just sort of screen tested our first choices, and a lot of the time, you know, that they were perfect. And
New Zealand's got a really strong lots of the actors do a really strong mix of lots of theatre. Mm-hmm. Because there's not a lot of film, and there's kind of really rubbish TV, and so there's a lot really fantastic character actors around the place that we know and have worked with, and so it was a matter of going, oh, these people are so good, at last we've got a chance to, you know, pull them in and give them something to do.
Mm. And in some cases, like, a lot of the actors are really just playing themselves, you know. There are a couple of people who'd never acted before, and, like, I mean, like, the kid who, you know, Jared's nephew, who's, like, the big guy with the he's got the band with the little girl and the ponytail. He's like, and he plays guitar and stuff. And I wrote the character based on him, and because I'd met him when I was in my friend's house, and I just found him just this incredibly weird kid, and I just thought, wanted a character like that in my film, and then eventually just cast him as the character, because I don't think I'd find anything better. So yeah, and he was exactly what I wanted. That was great. Yeah.
I like the opening scenes at the Meaty Boy. So I wanted to know if there was actually a Meaty Boy in New Zealand, or if you guys have any stories kind of from the fast food front lines.
We've got a good story about a friend of ours used to work in Kentucky Fried Chicken. And him and they had this, you know, their manager, the, you know, the store manager, used to come to work with a briefcase every day. And he was wearing a suit, and he was very professional. And all the other employees used to wonder what was in the briefcase. And they're like, why do you need a briefcase to come to work managing KFC? And eventually, like, after a few months, when he wasn't looking, he had gone off to do something. They snuck into the office, and they opened up his briefcase. And inside it was a single apple and a bottle of Prozac.
Oh. And it's true. It's really a true story. Oh, and that's the place we remodeled that. That's the exact store where he worked, but we remodeled it to look like Meaty
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah, so none of like, so Meaty Boy never, doesn't exist. That was actually
comes at the top.
That was the KFC, and then we changed everything. So I didn't want to have a world where anything was very specific, you know, that anyone could relate too much to. And so, you know, we made up the video game that was based on a game called Mortal Kombat, and it's a very...
I was just going to ask about that.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
was the inspiration for Mortal Kombat?
Well, I mean, I really like... I love video games, but I don't like anything... I never really get into the new kind of games. You know, I really like arcade games, and like the 80s and early 90s kind of games. Just because, you know, there's a real kind of naivety to them, but there's like a real inventiveness to it as well. And so Mortal Kombat, you know, it's like, that was a huge game for us, and it kind of blew everyone away because it was like this photographic game, and it was like,
when you were 10 or something.
Yeah, well, no, I was only 15. And then, but like, yeah, so that's another one of the elements in the film that was made up. You know, we made up this game, Fight Man, and I wasn't, you know, I guess it's just nice when you watch a movie and you see a little bit of effort has gone into the production design where they've actually, you know, created new things, and you automatically, you know it's Mortal Kombat, or you know that it's a McDonald's or Burger King, but it's, you know, it just helps set it in a slightly different world as well.
So, Lauren, are you as adept as Lily, aka Dangerous Person, at pulling out people's lines?
No,
absolutely not. No, I was raised without a television, and I have a loathing for video games of any sort, so it was genius for me to have a go at a joystick, I tell you. Joystick, is that what they're called? You know, the thing. I had to get lessons on how to look like I was doing.
Console,
thank you. Yeah, no, yeah. He's the boss of that stuff.
I'm not even I hardly ever play video
PlayStation.
Games.
You know you don't. It's true.
But if I get a chance to play something from the 80s, I'd definitely jump into it. I love it. Again, like that's a big aesthetic thing for us was the 80s as a reference. Like the computers are all these archaic machines, which is, you know, you could probably never actually run the internet on them or stream video. But you know, and so yeah, so again.
Can you talk about your experiences at Sundance?
Yeah.
Best place in the world.
It's an incredible opportunity to really learn a lot about filmmaking and your script. Someone who I was there with said she'd just done like 3 years at the one here, the film school here.
USC.
And yeah, she said like in front of everyone, like after a week, I feel like just wasted 3 years and I should have just come and done this. I've just like learnt so much. And so it's a real privilege to get access to all of those minds, you know, who all come in, and it's a very concentrated process. And then Lauren got to come as the actor, you know, when we workshopped the scenes, and we got Judah Friedlander, who's a great comic, American comic, and he came in and he played the part of Jared for the Sundance scenes. And yeah, and it was just
It's really rewarding because everybody comes, they all do it, everyone comes for free, so automatically there's just, it's all about community and kind of mentorship and all of that fantastic stuff. So it really feels like it sets you in the right direction as far as making work for the right reasons. They kind of infuse a feeling of responsibility to try and be rigorous with yourself about everything. So
is that how you got discovered by Miramax before it ever came to the festival? Because it's sort of an odd... I mean,
It is an odd
story. Because you said you thought it was just going to be a small little film to play festivals in New Zealand.
Yeah.
You were already had a distributor before you ever got to the festival.
Before you had even finished editing the film. But we...
Taika got an Oscar nomination, which meant that they were already watching him, I think. And then...
So I had met a couple of those guys about a year before or something, and kind of talked about, they'd asked me what projects I'd had, and I sort of mentioned, this and that, and, my kind of strange ideas, and they weren't very interested at all. And then...
They're very excited.
Yeah, like, sounds very exciting. So, you must be so excited. And then that was the end of it. And then, so we made a little film in New Zealand with the Film Commission. And then the Oscar nomination thing kind of came out. And that's actually probably helped me get funding as well because of that. Sort of like the whole film got fast-tracked by the Film Commission because... suddenly kind
golden
of like
boy for
golden
five
boy
minutes.
For a couple, for a little a brief moment in New Zealand, and just great timing, like just having, especially having a script that was as odd as this one, and then having those guys kind of just go, well, we don't get it, but here's some money, go and make your film that you want to make, we trust you, and I think that hardly ever happens, so it's just totally lucky.
Did you have how is it in New Zealand with people watching when you're filming? Did you have like people watching, as you're doing scenes, or did they not care?
New Zealanders are really we're not even gonna look at you.
New Zealand, we've got a thing, a phenomenon that tall poppy syndrome in New Zealand, where if anyone's doing really well, it's quite common to try and bring them down, cut them down, and say,
In fact,
he's been to the moon, so what? I mean, plenty of people have been to the moon. And, so it's like, like in a lot of ways, also like, the present, even before Lord of the Rings, is, like a lot of films were made in, in the cities and stuff, and there were a few other American productions made there. And I think a lot of people really don't really care about seeing a production. There are a few, obviously, anywhere you go, there's always somebody who kind of likes to just look, but... Also, I think in New Zealand, the chances of actually seeing a star are so slim that people kind of just think, well, who am I going to see? Like, some guy from a New Zealand soap opera? No thanks. So who I see in the supermarket anyway. So it's like, those sorts of things are never really a huge deal.
So what are you guys both working on next, or have you been working on since this?
Lauren is...
Okay, you do me, not do you. Go.
Lauren's got a film collective back home called the Chapel Collective, and it's her and a bunch of other artists who make films, and they're currently making a feature. They're trying to do like low budget feature films outside of any kind of studio or financial system. So it's films without
really
without money.
Yeah,
just concentrating purely on making a story. And so she's probably going to go back home and continue with that. I'm finishing a script based on the Oscar nominated short. And this is called The Volcano, and it's about some kids growing up, coming of age story, but kids growing up in New Zealand in the countryside in the 80s, around the time when Thriller came out. And it's the coming of age story, but with my twist on it, I guess.
And he's just finished doing the Jermaine, who's in Flight of the Conchords, who plays Jared, is just done that HBO series, and Dyke has just written and directed two episodes of that, just finished 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. And they've finished shooting now, and it's coming out the same weekend that this film comes out.
So was that on purpose? Was that timed?
Not by Miramax. I think Miramax, originally the date was going to be a couple of weeks earlier, but they put it off because there was another romantic comedy with, well-known actors in it, and they didn't really want to compete with another romantic comedy, so decided to just go for it and compete with Fantastic Four instead.
Are you going to try to mix in your love of old school video games and arcades into your script?
Yeah, well, it's definitely got more of an 80s setting, and it's, you know, a lot of... Oh, well, in the country, like, I grew up in a really, really tiny town, and there weren't any video games or arcades or anything. It was like television was the only sort of connection to the outside world, and especially to America.
And you used to make your own with sticks.
Your own, my own
video
what?
Games.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't want to talk about that.
I can't believe this wasn't asked at the Q&A last night, but the million-dollar question, what are both of your favorite animals?
What's
mine with? Just changed. Mine was baboon until last night when Taika showed me this BBC Planet Earth, the latest documentary. Have you guys seen
Planet
it?
Planet Earth, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I think they went Amazonian. They were, like, from the Philippines or something.
It was a parrot.
Bird of Paradise.
Never seen before ever in your life.
And he like flips his wings out and it's
and he
like,
looks like a squid. Like, but it's a bird.
Black, big black bird with like a strip of blue with like these two blue
it's
things
like
that look like eyes.
It's like a cross between Pac-Man and a shrimp. But it's a bird, it flies. That thing,
that's her favourite
bird.
Yep.
Animal. Go. Big bat. Mine's, I took it now.
And now she's given up baboon. That's now my favourite.
Baboons are amazing.
A baboon that could fly would be pretty cool.
May I ask about the HBO show?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about it and you know how it went?
It went well. It's going to be hilarious. It's going to be huge. It's basically about these two New Zealand musicians living in New York who are, I guess you could say, trying to make it. But that's not really any of the story. It's just about these guys from another country hanging out in New York, and you know, I guess their perspective of, you know, life in America, and a little bit like that TV show in the 80s, what was it called, with the guy Valky?
Perfect Strangers
Perfect Strangers with two New Zealanders instead of an Albanian or wherever he was from.
That's lovely because
the country,
right?
It's outrageous, like, so it's okay, so.
Yeah, and Brett and Jermaine speak in the same accent as that guy.
How is
hello, Brett, I'm not dealing.
I was working for HBO. Did they give you a lot of creative freedom? Did they have notes?
No, I mean, it was fine. They were great, actually. They're all about, you know, like, I mean, I think the fact that they are taking a chance on you know, these two guys from New Zealand and giving them a TV show, so it shows that they've, you know, they've got enough balls to, you know, just kind of let them do what they want and, you know, and back them. And I came on, you know, like kind of halfway through their shooting, so for me the job was a lot easier because they'd already established, you know, their characters and the settings and the tone and everything. And so, you know, I'd just walk on set and say, and go.
And, be funnier.
And action. But, no, it's totally great. I mean, obviously with TV, there's not a huge amount of creative freedom because you need, you know, because it's a format and you can't really be as poetic as, you know, as in film. But still, there's some pretty unconventional humour in this show. I think it's pretty cool. I can't tell you what it is.
Well, going along with his question, what about the costumes and making them and for you actually wearing them, wearing one during the shoot? I mean, what was that like, having that on and looking at your camera, looking at yourself in dailies and
how was
that? I was wearing a wig, so automatically that great thing, if you put a wig on, then you vanish. So that was, I didn't actually watch any of the dailies or anything, but that costume was so uncomfortable. It was just genius. It was one of those things that felt like having lead weight on your head. So it wasn't the nicest thing to wear, but I mean, they're beautiful costumes. That the costume designer made them all from scratch. She searched around, and Taika kept on saying, "No, you had to be made worse. Keep on less, more sellotape."
Yeah, like the original costumes were like really well made, and like I wanted to be.
It was ripping it.
Like,
and she was going, "Oh," and he's going, "No."
Yeah, I mean, originally it was supposed to really look like these guys had made the costumes themselves, and we originally wanted you guys to actually make them themselves, but there was just no time. Kind of everything, like, once, you know, we got into the second week of pre-production, everything just sort of spun out of control, and it was just like no time to do anything, just make the film.
There's a lot to ask for your actors to, like, make the costumes as well.
I mean, like, stop. We were dying to. No, we really wanted to. I was really pissed off. I couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
So
you talk about, like, this next script that you're working on. Has making this movie and the reception it's at least gotten critically and across the world helped with financing for your second movie? Do you feel like you're...
I think
sort
so.
Of, like,
I think this will definitely help with the next film. You know, the next film obviously is a bigger budget. It's funny, like, the next film was actually the original script that I took to the Sundance Writers Lab the first time I went there. So it's so the next one is actually my first film. And so I got rid of any expectation on my second film by making that first. And now I can just go back and make my debut film, which is going to be brilliant.
And lower the expectation.
Yeah, lower the expectation first.
Shift the expectation.
And like come out with the big guns.
It's like David Copperfield, smoke mirrors.
The stop-action photography mm-hmm. that you guys did, especially the sleeping bag scenes with setting sun, mm-hmm. did you guys fake the setting sun, or did you really shoot for like a whole day just being dragged around in the sleeping bag?
Yeah, that was like about 5 or 6 hours of shooting that stuff with but they were extras in the they were like
they
yeah,
were doubles.
Doubles.
I did it in Body Sundance. Doubles. That was a scene that Taika made us do in Sundance, which and so that was like 2 hours in Sundance, and I was like, I am
she
never.
Hated it.
I will do anything. I have a high tolerance for doing, you know, stuff, but that is against all rules. That's like you move, stop. I mean, for 2 hours, it's like oh.
So how many extras did you just use one extra double each, or did
yeah.
you?
And they got sunburned. Everybody was sunburned at the end of the day. And like we were off shooting other stuff, and we just left them with like a second unit crew. And you know,
and they were crawling through cow dung, and
yeah, they were like crawling on these grass patches with like prickles and stuff, and like
yeah, they were weeping
cow shit.
It was
so funny.
They were crying.
Yeah, seriously, it's exhausting. It's the most exhausting thing in the world.
Who was the girl?
The little girl.
Little girl. It wasn't a little girl. It was like a woman. You don't use little girls. What are you talking about?
In New Zealand, it's culture. They love it, those little girls in New Zealand. She was
yeah, we got a
person.
4-year-old girl to double as Lauren.
Well, speaking of the little girl, the one that you used had the Jewish stars, and I know that your background is what's your background in Judaism and following your practices and stuff like that?
Well, my family's not really, we don't really practice. I mean, like, I'm kind of like half Maori, and, you know, and then my mother's side is Jewish as well, and so it's already a strange mix. But yeah, I think, like, I mean, like on my mother's side, you know, they still observe, like, you know, certain times of the year and stuff, like, now and again, but it's not, I was never brought up in that, you know, to really observe the faith like that. So, but you know, but it's interesting that because for the tribe that I'm from, the Māori tribe, the predominant religion there is called Ringatu, which means the upraised hand, and it's a it's actually based on the Old Testament. It's a religion where during the 1800s. Okay, here we go. History lesson. When New Zealand was rediscovered by the white man, a lot of the missionaries and you know a lot of people came over, and they and one of the theories was that the tribes, the Māori tribes, were the lost tribe of Israel, and so that was like a big theory back then, and that was like a belief that. And then a lot of tribes took on this belief, and they like had like these mixtures of, you know, kind of like this Old Testament mixed with Māori spirituality and stuff, and created these new religions which were, you know, pretty big back in those days. And some of those religions and practices still survive today, especially in the area where I come from. And so, you know, we have the Mark and David, and then we've got also like we call ourselves the Hūrae, which is Māori for Jews, and so that's like, and like the 12th day of every month is like this spiritual kind of practice day on Marae, which is the traditional Māori
community
center. So it's, I mean, it's kind of complicated and weird, but it sort of makes sense that I'm like half-half, so it's sort of funny.
I'll ask the question about the DVD. What do you have planned for it?
Well, I'm just having some conversations about the DVD at the moment. Obviously, want to do commentary, and you know, like, we overshot this film completely, and so there will definitely be some extra scenes, and you know, I think we dropped about 25 minutes of the story from, you know, from the final movie. I'm not going to put 25 minutes of extra stuff on the DVD, don't worry. But
was there a scene that you really were regretting cutting, that you knew the DVD?
Yeah, and then I put it back in at the last minute.
Or any tiny bits or something that we just found.
Well, there was a dream sequence, actually, that we shot.
Through Ingmar Bergman. Kind of.
Yeah, it's a very Bergman dream sequence in black and white that was shot for the film, and where Lily has gigantic robotic arms from the video game, and she's on the beach fighting seagulls, and that never made it into the film, but it's something which I really want to be on the DVD. And
yes.
It's funny, like, the film commission, you know, gave us this money and basically gave me complete creative control, left me alone. The one time they came to set was the day that we were shooting the dream sequence, and they turned up, and they're like...
I was covered in blood, like, I was covered
What's going on here? She's got blood all over her chest.
Climbing, kind of fighting this stuff on the beach.
Like, it's pretending she's fighting these seagulls, and I'm, like, yelling out, okay, they're pulling your heart out of your chest. Fight them off! And they're like, wow, your film looks interesting, Taika.
They smiled and nodded and walked away really quickly.
So what was the reaction after they finally saw the final film?
Well, they never saw the dream sequence, so I think they were pleased. Then they forgot about that. But the other, only other things I can imagine that would go on the DVD are, I don't know, I thought it would be really funny just to do the entire film, like, do the rough assembly, which is like 2.5 hours long, just to punish people. Really funny. Funny for me.
Funny kind of way. New Zealand hasn't been released in New Zealand yet, so it's been released here first. So not many people have seen it. The Film Commission have seen it and loved it. But yeah.
Why was it? What was the decision behind that?
Well, the apart from the fact that I don't think we can do anything in New Zealand without getting approval from bigger countries.
If you don't like it, we won't.
No, I think, but the main reason is for the distributors in New Zealand and Australia, it makes much more business sense for them to wait and see how a film does here, and it makes their job a lot easier advertising the film in New Zealand. They can just say, this is what these guys said about the film, or, you know.
Our main paper, which shows you how the Tall Poppy thing, they wrote this big article up about publishing our bad Variety review, saying Eel versus Shark got a terrible review in Variety.
It's like, Americans, it's like something like, Americans say Eel versus Shark won't fly, or something like that, you know.
These people were coming up to me going, I'm so sorry. It's going to be a
terrible film. And I got these emails from people saying, oh man, it's just, don't worry man, I'm sure the film's good. So like funny. Because like they do, you know, it's like a big thing in New Zealand to concentrate on like the negative stuff, you know. So
the reviewer probably
they never write.
Go find him and like.
So funny, eh?
You can't do anything about it.
Actually, was it always an eagle versus a shark? And did you pick those animals because of certain symbolism?
Yeah, I mean I'm not sure about the specific symbolism of an eagle and a shark, but for me they represent, you know, the loneliest of the animals, you know, the groups. Very solo animals who are. I just like the pattern that they, you know, they both kind of circle around, you know, looking for something, going around and around in circles, but just in completely different environments. You know. They're very different, but also very similar as well. Yeah.
So, what's the one thing you'd like an audience to take from this film?
A receipt
to give to the text.
I think just if they, you know, I think it's important to me that people don't go into this film just thinking, okay, it's like a kind of broad comedy that, you know, and it's just good for a couple of laughs for an hour and a half and then you can forget about it. I think it's, you know, I hope that the film connects with people on a, you know, on a deeper level, and that people realise, you know, that we are all outsiders, and that, you know, that this is like one of the main themes of the film, is that, you know, that you can connect to that fact that none of us belong, you know, that I think that kind of helps to ground you a little bit more in the fact that, you know, we're all together in this, and that it's not a film where you laugh at people who are different. Mm-hmm. It's a film, you know, it's a story about recognizing that we are all those people. They're just extreme versions of ourselves. And
so you can wake up the empathetic part of people's natures, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My big theory is that humans are the outsiders in the animal world, and that we're like the nerds of the animal world, and that, you know, we don't fit in, and that they're all secretly just like looking at us, just like shaking their heads and what are those things. And you know, I mean when you think about it, we've evolved so much now that we just, I just don't think we belong here anymore. We're like just these clumsy, ridiculous animals. Not even animals. We're just like strange, awkward, clumsy beasts.
That sounds like your third movie.
Yeah, clumsy
strange,
beasts.
Strange, awkward, clumsy beasts. Yeah, exactly. Great title. All right,
one more question.
Did you get to take anything from the set? Did you bring anything home?
Too much.
What did you take?
You bought too much. I have numbed sharks. Our living room is like numbed sharks and all of
samurai swords.
Oh my god. The candles.
Yeah, I took a lot of stuff.
Candle wick bedspreads, far too much stuff. I've been slowly, he's been away for a month. I've been putting it into the edit.
What did you take?
Nothing, I don't think.
Where's the costumes?
Miramax has the costumes at the moment.
Yeah,
they're over here
really
doing.
People are really wearing their real costumes around. It's really.
Really?
Yeah.
Mean. Yeah, well, we're submitting the costumes to the Academy for
consideration.
Costume for Best Wardrobe 2006.
Don't put him past him. He might get enough.